From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our weekly update of news and events from the Latin America Caribbean region with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, reporting from Managua, Nicaragua. We're going to focus on two things. First, the APEC summit, that's the Asia-Pacific Economic Conference, that took place over the 16th to the 18th of November in Papua New Guinea. China's President Xi Jinping highlighted a challenge of choices between cooperation or confrontation. There was no final declaration because of a disagreement between the U.S., Japan, and China over a draft. And President Trump didn't attend this year, rather sending Vice President Pence. We're also going to discuss Argentina, which has some serious economic issues. But let's start with that APEC summit. And President Xi and the region and China, which is something that I end up talking with just about everyone about, because China is pretty much everywhere these days.
Yeah, and the APEC summit, it's that, what is it, the Asia-Pacific Economic Summit.
Yeah.
The almost all the important Asian countries, plus the United States, some countries from Latin America, and among the Latin America, in fact, there were only three Latin American countries, Mexico, Chile, and Peru, all of whom are members of the so-called Pacific Alliance, that's a block of right-wing governments, countries with right-wing governments that are trying to promote a kind of neoliberal free trade agenda, an integration model based on that kind of thinking in Latin America. So three of those countries were participating in the APEC summit. And I think this does point to what we've been talking about many, many times in previous conversations, that the contradiction between the United States agenda in Latin America and elsewhere, in this case Asia, and the agenda of the countries in the region concerned, in this case Latin America, are not necessarily aligned. Because, for example, President Trump didn't attend that summit. He sent his vice president, Mike Pence,
right,
which some people interpreted as an insult to President Xi,
right,
and the other presidents.
Yeah, some of the racist media here, of course. Well, you know, that means that he lost face. You know how them Asians are. You know, it was kind of some of the spin they put on it here.
Yeah, but on the other hand, the Russian Federation wasn't represented by
either, right,
Vladimir Putin. It was represented by Medvedev, the prime minister.
Right.
So, you know, I think that, as you say, that's just a kind of way of the Western media getting in a dig at President Xi.
Right.
But and the main speech at that APEC summit was President Xi's speech, and it was very positive, very open, talking about the need to promote cooperation rather than confrontation. And so whereas in terms of what it was saying to the Asian countries and the Latin American countries, they will have taken that in the spirit in which it was meant. The United States may well have looked at that and taken that as a threat, because I read at least one commentator, one Western commentator, not sure if it was Reuters or one of them, saying that President Xi basically said in his speech that we can either take the road of cooperation or confrontation almost as a challenge to the United States. But he's not the one making the challenge. The people that are the government that's promoting the kind of conflict, if you like, is the United States government, because it's as the position of the United States has weakened vis-a-vis global rivals like China and the Russian Federation, instead of pushing for ways to reach an accommodation that serves everybody's interests, what President Trump has done is push for protectionism and tariffs, and right. He started this trade war with China that it's not clear how that's going to pan out. But the probability is that it's not going to pan out in anybody's favor, but least of all for the United States. And it remains to be seen, of course. And it might even work. Who knows? I'm not an economist. Right. I don't know. But it seems to me that the APEC summit was a forum in which all those very important countries, South Korea, Thailand, I think Indonesia was present. Really, really important economies in the Asian region, and also right. in, at a global level in the case of Korea and Japan.
Right.
But also these Latin American countries, Mexico, Chile, and Peru, and they were there observing this. And they have to make up their minds which way they're going to jump, because right. the United States puts it in those terms. China doesn't.
Right.
China just wants to cooperate.
Right.
And so, what does that mean for Latin America? And in Mexico, you have Andrés Manuel López Obrador. He's going to take over the Mexican presidency, I think, on December the 1st. And Jair Bolsonaro, the Brazilian president, he'll be taking over the Brazilian presidency right. Also in the month of December. Now, of course, Brazil wasn't at that summit, but
right.
I'd be very surprised if they weren't observing it very closely. And it'll be interesting to see how Jair Bolsonaro's extreme right-wing discourse, the kind of macho bullying bluster that he's come out with prior to taking the presidency.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see how that gets modified when he has to deal with global realities. Now, the person that he's chosen for his foreign minister is somebody that's really obscure and who doesn't seem... It's a very strange choice. It seems to be based on the individual's religious beliefs more than his diplomatic skill or experience, because he's not a front-rank Brazilian diplomat. So we may be in for some surprises in terms of Brazil's foreign policy. But going back to Mexico, Chile, and Peru, we've already talked about how Peru is working closely with Bolivia to develop the Chinese initiative of transcontinental railway. Will that go ahead as a result of the change of government in Brazil? We don't know. But and the fact is that Peru is very much on board the idea of the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative insofar as it impacts on Latin America, because it'll for Peru, that'll mean that it opens up trade across to the Atlantic. And which will be very important for the Peruvian economy. Likewise in Chile, and although Sebastián Piñera is also a very right-wing politician and a close diplomatic ally of the United States, the Chilean business and commercial elites are very much in tune with China's approach to commercial affairs, economics in general, and the Chilean economy is very interested in maintaining successful trade relations with China,
right.
and Mexico too. Mexico is likely to increasingly develop its trade with China, but it's faced with this contradiction that the recently renegotiated NAFTA agreement. I've forgotten what they call it now. They've changed the name, but essentially it's the same,
right.
with a few tweaks that Trump has window dressed as you know, a great breakthrough for the United States and a complete renegotiation of the NAFTA treaty, which of course is nonsense. And there may be some benefits to the renegotiation that he's achieved. But I'd be very surprised if it makes any fundamental difference to Mexico's natural economic development towards China, because China is a much more dynamic trade partner than the United States. And Mexico is unlikely to develop its economy by closer integration with the United States and Canada. It's much more likely to develop its economy by developing across the Pacific towards China and the other major Asian economies. So, and, you know, and that's that. In summary, looking at the APEC summit, and I do think it's fair to say that Mexico, Chile, and Peru are likely to continue to drift away from, in terms of trade policy, away from the US sphere of influence and the US, United States way of doing things, and to integrate more and more over the next 3, 4, 5 years into the sphere of influence of China's trade vision. Which is, you know, China has a trade vision that is win-win for everybody. That's their slogan, isn't it? Like, we want win-win trade relations with all our partners. That's what the Chinese say.
Yeah.
Whereas the United States says, do what we want or else. You know, that sounds very simplistic. But when you boil it all down, that's what relations with the United States come down to: do what we want or else. And the relationship with China is, well, let's see how we can work out something so that we both do well out of it. You know, so yeah. If you were the governments of Mexico, Chile, and Peru, regardless of your political complexion, who are you going to work with?
Right.
You're going to work with people, you know, it's just obvious, isn't it? And that to me is the significance of the APEC summit, because President Xi confirmed that approach on the part of China, and made very clear that it's not, for its part, it's not going to deepen the current conflictive trade atmosphere that's been provoked by the policies of President Donald Trump.
You have a few moving parts in there. First of all, the recently announced, soon to be foreign minister of Brazil. He's got almost an ideological, or has expressed almost an ideological antipathy towards China. The communism was the big Megillah, and then it was nihilism that's the big scary thing, but nihilism in service to China's international interests, and so he warns people to beware of that. But at a press conference in the last few days, you know, he said, well, actually, we're going to be looking around at the best deal we can get from Brazil on everything and showing no favoritism towards anyone. So we'll see how that is. What it does tell me is that, as you're mentioning, the China's role, you know, in these different places, they were an alternative. You know, if the only deal, I have nickel and I have uranium and I have whatever, the only game in town is either it sits in the ground or we sell it to the United States and EU. You know, they're going to dictate the terms. I got somebody else that's coming in here and they offer me something else. Oh, well, we'll build a road or we'll do this or we'll do that. Now you're in a game, you know, and you can negotiate and work this against that. You have some leverage. And so just the existence of China in that landscape is a benefit. And it seems that he's giving at least, new foreign minister in Brazil is giving at least lip service to that idea. We'll see how that actually plays out. And I think just in general, if you take a look at the landscape, I mean, we saw this with Chavez before and the whole way that the region started to engage the world and the nations, each other. We don't care what your ideological system is, your political system. We'll do business with you. China does it that way now. It may be that even the right wing, as these governments come to power, because we've seen Macri also, you know, reaching towards China and doing some business with China. I think that there's a constituency among the elite down there to play both ends against the middle, or at least willing to entertain it and to provide an appearance of doing that. And that's an interesting change in dynamics from Monroe Doctrine politics.
Yeah, and even in Brazil, I know when just after Jair Bolsonaro, when we discussed this a little, and I think we both agree that what we have to see, apart from how Bolsonaro's policies play out geopolitically, internationally, when he comes bang up against the international realities. The other thing is, as you just pointed out, how he's going to cope with the inter-elite squabbles and conflicts over policy, in particular over trade policy and commercial policy. Because, as you say, and there are big chunks of the Brazilian elite that would do very well out of trading with China.
Right.
One of the things that's interesting there is that, and I don't think I'm misremembering when I say that I think Embraer, the big Brazilian aerospace company, they had a joint venture project with China, I think, developing. I'm not sure if it was advanced airline stuff or aerospace stuff, but that if it hasn't already been knocked on the head by the current usurper government under Michel Temer that's in its last days now, it's likely to be under Bolsonaro, because because U.S. interests like Boeing and Lockheed Martin and those big U.S. aerospace companies really didn't like to see the emergence of Embraer as a global competitor, which it was beginning to, it was starting to become. So I only mention that as an example of the kind of inter-elite fight that's going to be going on, especially in the first year or so of Bolsonaro's presidency,
right,
as they try and reach some kind of accommodation about who gets which chunk of the pie.
Right.
And the other thing that's interesting about that is Bolsonaro is taking over at a time when it was interesting that you mentioned Argentina in relation to that, because Macri, as you said, Mauricio Macri, went to China and I think they negotiated various deals while he was there.
Yeah.
But what he actually did there doesn't really matter. The point is what you said, that the mere fact that he's going there indicates that Argentina is another Latin American country that, even though it's not on the Pacific side of the continent, simply cannot afford to ignore the reality of China's increasing global commercial leadership.
Right.
Because the United States isn't offering leadership. The United States is like a crab retiring within its shell. And it's China that's offering global commercial leadership.
Right.
And so, and another reason, of course, in Argentina's case, why it was so important, is because their economy is crashing through the floor.
Right.
That's also very important as we watch Bolsonaro take over Brazil, and who's leading his economic team. And I don't know if he was actually one of Pinochet's Chicago boys, but he's of that, you know, that's where he's coming from ideologically. So Brazil is going to go through unless something very strange happens between now and, you know, over the next year, Brazil's likely to experience over the next year the kind of economic shock that Chile did, and that Argentina is now experiencing. Right. If you look at Argentina's economy, I think I sent you some notes on this before we started talking. Its industry is currently only operating at 60% capacity.
Yeah.
The car auto manufacturing in Argentina is quite an important industry. Textiles are quite an important industry. They're both operating at below 50% capacity. Inflation right now is at 45%. It's likely to end the year at 50%, the highest since 1991. Yep. So there's a collapse in consumer demand because people can't afford the prices. And there's no sign of any productive turnaround in the economy. I don't think anybody knows the real current unemployment figure in Argentina, but it's likely to be well over 10%, probably more like 20%.
Right.
And among youth, it's likely to be well over 20% right now.
Yeah.
So, and what you have in Argentina is exactly what you and I predicted back in 2015, immediately after the election. The economy has gone through the floor. The economy is now more in debt than it was at the time of the crisis back in 2000, which saw the collapse of the government back then. And this is what Brazilian people voted for.
Paulo Guedes is the one you're talking about.
It's obvious that that's what's going to happen to people in Brazil.
Right.
It's obvious that now that the what Mauricio Macri offered during his election campaign back in 2015 was just completely false, just a downright lie.
Yep.
And in Argentina, something that's worth pointing out that's been very much in the news over the last few days, and something that really symbolizes the completely falsity and the hollowness and the moral vacuity of right-wing governments in Latin America, and in particular the Macri government in Argentina, is that they finally discovered the sunken submarine, the submarine that went missing over a year ago. It's the boat was called the San Juan. And it was lost at sea over a year ago. And the government really treated the relatives of the 44 dead mariners shamefully.
Right.
And there's absolute outrage among, and you know, and these people are military families. You know, they're not.
Right.
They're not the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo. They're not kind of radicals or progressives or, you know, and these are military families, and they're absolutely disgusted with their government. And that, you know, that radiates out from them to their social and economic class there, and the people who like them, who almost all of them will have voted for Macri. And they can now see, in the same way that the United States government treats its veterans disgracefully, and they can now see that the right-wing government in Argentina is treating their military disgracefully.
Yeah.
And that's just completely symbolic of the right-wing government of Mauricio Macri in Argentina. But if you try and kind of conceptualize that at a regional level, look at what that means. It means that Argentina, one of the wealthiest countries in Latin America, one of the most important economies in Latin America, has crashed through the floor. Its population have been ground down into impoverishment by right-wing policies. And if you compare that with Venezuela, that Venezuela has survived very severe sanctions, and it's going through serious economic difficulties, but those economic difficulties are externally applied. Yeah. They're externally generated.
Yes, warfare.
The United States and the European Union that have forced sanctions on economic sanctions on Venezuela's population, and then hypocritically they turn around and say, oh, well, look at all these refugees from Venezuela. Isn't that terrible?
Right.
As if they have no role in that. But there in Argentina, their own government, with the total complicity of the United States elites and the IMF and the European Union's approach to dealing with international relations and dealing with social policy. And Argentina is an extreme example of what has been happening in Europe in terms of austerity. Did you know, just as a footnote to what we're talking about, Philip Alston, a special rapporteur for the United Nations, just produced a report really condemning outright the austerity policies of the United Kingdom government because of what it's done to generate something like 13 million people in poverty in the United Kingdom. So there's total hypocrisy from the part of the Western governments, Western institutions, Western media, in their coverage of their own countries, but also in particular in their coverage of Latin America.
Let me just say this much here. You can see that this is on the agenda for Brazil now. You know, Paulo Guedes, who is the person that Bolsonaro has, you know, nominated to be the economic minister, his PhD, University of Chicago, taught by Milton Friedman. They're going to do exactly the same thing in Brazil that Macri has done in Argentina, that all of those people did across the EU, particularly, you know, in the places that are being hardest hit by austerity. That their solution to the problem of austerity is more austerity.
Argentina has elections in 2019.
Yeah.
Now it remains to be seen whether Cristina Kirchner will manage to stay out of jail. You know,
to be allowed to run, are they going to do to her what they did to Lula? They're trying.
Yeah, they're trying to do to her what they did to Lula. But the interesting thing there is that, and both the more social democrat, progressive politicians there and Cristina both agree that they can't afford to mess about on petty ideological differences. The important thing is to defeat fascism, which is something that Dilma Rousseff has also been saying this week at an important political forum in Buenos Aires. But let's see what happens. And there's on the basis of what happens, Argentina is heading for a very serious crisis, and it's not clear at all whether it will be able to be resolved politically or what's going to happen. And likewise, Brazil. We'll just have to wait and see how things pan out.
Yep. So we've got about 2 minutes. What else do you want to touch?
In terms of 2019, I'm talking about that election in Argentina. We also have elections in various countries there, which are, let's have a look. The most important elections are the ones in Argentina. Bolivia has presidential and legislative elections, which Evo Morales is likely to win, and he's almost certainly going to be allowed to run as a candidate. And then in other countries, El Salvador, Guatemala, Panama, and Uruguay, and all those elections will be important, but are unlikely to change the overall balance of power. The most important one is going to be the election in Argentina. And the other important thing to see will be whether Andrés Manuel López Obrador can make an impact on the regional situation vis-a-vis the dominance of the United States.
Right, exactly. In other words, in Mexico, where they did have the election, where the progressive won, you know, the progressive won, quote unquote, in Ecuador also with Lenin Moreno, and that took a sharp turn away from where people thought. Let's see what AMRO does, too. I've got to keep an eye on that. All right. Well, thank you for your time, as always. Maybe we could take a closer look at some of those elections next week and some of the other things that are going on in Cuba, the progress on the Constitution, Venezuela's municipal elections coming up next month, and a bunch of other things that are happening. And appreciate your time, Tony, and be well.
Okay, thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.